Okay, let's go ahead and get started this morning. So today we'll talk about, we'll begin chapter 8, the last chapter in the textbook, and talk about array signal processing. We'll spend hopefully two lectures on this material. I should finish it next class, and then we don't have class a week from today. That's because of fall break. And then we have the midterm on that Thursday, when you return from fall break. So we've got two more classes before the midterm. So the reason we'll talk about array signal processing in this course is mainly to show how we can use adaptive filtering to implement or solve the problem with the array processor. The actual technology of array processing is beyond the scope of this course, but there are a lot of interesting issues with these arrays, the design and construction of them. So on the front page here, I show a picture of this is a 1,000 node array that was built, I think that's from CMU if I remember right, or MIT, someplace like that. These arrays, they're in the early 70s, some of the first versions of these things were built and typically deployed in environments like auditoriums where you want to have people speaking with anybody in the audience being able to stand up and speak and having the arrays being able to focus on them and record their voice with a fairly high quality. So people were building fairly large arrays designed to cover fairly large acoustic spaces. In recent years, there's been a lot of interest in using these inside smaller environments like automobiles. So you'll find some products being marketed in automobiles where you might have a fairly low number of sensors, perhaps 4 to 8 sensors, and they might be deployed along the visor of the driver's seats, in the driver's seat along the visor, or along the frame of the window, or those kinds of things. The other, I would say, main driver of this technology these days are the high-quality, high-performance audio or video conferencing facilities where they want to have people sitting around a table talking, and they want to be able to have a centrally located microphone that's able to direct itself to whichever person is actively talking. So to do the adaptive part of that, we need adaptive signal processing, and that's really what we want to focus on in Chapter 8. However, to get you to that point, we have to talk a little bit about how these arrays actually work, how they're from a mathematical point of view. So today, we're going to talk about sort of the basic arrays and talk about some fixed or deterministic approaches to steering the arrays based on knowing what direction your signal is coming from and knowing what directions your noise are coming from. And if we know that information, we can then adjust the parameters of the array to be maximally sensitive to that signal. So we'll talk a little bit about, we'll introduce the arrays, we'll talk a little bit about how you get a signal-to-noise ratio improvement and why you want a signal-to-noise ratio improvement. And then we'll talk about sensitivity patterns, some beam steering, and then what's known as array shading. What we won't do today, though, is talk about how you actually build these arrays. There's a lot of issues with when you put microphones this close together. There's issues with, for example, how you space them, which is related to the parameters of your signal. But there's also some issues about how you get how you minimize crosstalk between the microphones and things like that. So it's not simply a matter of just plopping down microphones. There's actually a fair amount of engineering that goes into these arrays so that you can acoustically isolate the sensors or electromagnetically isolate the sensors so that the assumptions that we need to make about decorrelation and such will hold. And then I think that other picture comes from, I think that's a sensitivity pattern for a two-dimensional array. And you can see it's steered in three directions, and we'll sort of learn about why that is. So array processing deals with applying signal processing techniques to a spatially distributed group of sensors. this is a kind of interesting topic, because it's an opportunity to see that mathematics we use for temporal sampling of signals is equally applicable to spatial sampling signals. Similarly, if you have a background in image processing and you've studied things like how to sample images, very much the same type of thinking goes into the design of the array. It can be thought of as a spatial sampling of a signal, and all the usual concepts about sampling theory sort of hold. The reason these arrays are of interest to us is that they have the potential for achieving improvements in the signal-to-noise ratio. And today, in a moment, we'll do a very simple derivation that shows sort of the best case SNR improvement that can be achieved. And that initially is why these arrays became very popular, because the thinking was, if you could deploy, let's say, on the order of 32 sensors and get a 32 dB improvement in signal-to-noise ratio, that would be very significant for applications where noise was a real problem. Of course, in practice, you find the improvements are not as great as you might like, and that's why the applications have been limited to environments where you can afford a fairly high cost for the hardware, because the big arrays are not that cheap. So, obviously they're used in the military, they're used in some of the commercial applications I just described. The generic topic array processing applies to a lot of different applications of these things, and whether we're talking about radio telescopes, you may have seen these large radio telescope grid. I think it's in New Mexico or Arizona, or whether you're talking about radar systems that sit on naval vessels and such, or whether we're talking about acoustic implementations, auditoriums, automobiles, and such. These are all similar applications of array processing. So the concept is used fairly extensively across a wide range of signal processing applications. The spatial layout of the array introduces the possibility of directional discrimination between the signal and the interference. So what that means is that if you have a good background in communications theory, or you've worked in areas like antenna design, the principles are basically the same. That one of the very nice theoretical results developed in communication theory is that you can improve your signal-to-noise ratio, or you can decrease your bit error rate if you deploy multiple antennas. And you're all pretty familiar with this, because you see these wireless hubs, for example, that have two antennas on them, and they get a significant improvement in performance. And in fact, the kind of beam steering technology we're going to talk about is used in these wireless hubs that have multiple antennas. You'll also be used to seeing cell phone towers that have multiple antennas on them. So the applications for this span a lot of different disciplines, but the basic idea is that by having these microphones that are spatially diverse, we can in fact improve the signal-to-noise ratio and therefore improve our ability to communicate or to detect signals. And that analysis you'll find in antenna theory classes, or you'll find in communication theory classes. In communications theory, it's called diversity reception. In antenna theory, you may have actually seen derivations of sensitivity patterns and things. And we'll talk about some of that today, but we're not going to spend a lot of time on some of the more basic elements of the array, because that's really addressed in other courses. The arrays can be arranged in a number of topologies. The simplest of arrays are one-dimensional. That means all the microphones are displayed along a line. The array we showed on the front page is a two-dimensional array. And you can even have three-dimensional arrays, or you can have sensors deployed in three dimensions. So if you wanted to localize a signal to a particular spot in this room, you would typically want, you could do that to some extent with a one-dimensional array, because you could then get what's called the angle of incidence of my voice with one of these walls, for example. With a two-dimensional array, you can do localization in two dimensions, and then with a three-dimensional array, you can do localization in three dimensions. So if you wanted to actually focus on the specific spot I was at, you could mount what typically would be done, which would be to mount small arrays on the three different surfaces, the front wall, the ceiling, and the side wall. And then by phasing those, you could actually localize to this specific point rather than just localizing to the direction in which my voice is coming from. Now, in practice, achieving improvement in the signal-to-noise ratio, in addition to just sort of, well, it involves detecting and tracking the signal. As you'll see by the end of today as we go through our analysis, if we know the direction of the signal and we know the direction of the noise, it's fairly straightforward to design the array to maximize the sensitivity to the signal and to attenuate or null out the noise. But that has a associated problem then in real applications where you have to actually detect the angle of arrival for the signal and the direction of the noise, and then you have to track that in real time. So that creates an additional level of signal processing problems, and adaptive filtering provides us with a way of doing that. There are also approaches that involve heuristics in doing this for particular applications such as audio. So we'll talk a little bit about how we do this in a fairly robust and fairly straightforward way with adaptive filtering. But there's been a lot of work done on this for specific applications like voice, where you can make use of your knowledge of the voice spectrum to do a better job of detecting speech activity and detecting the angle at which that signal's coming from. But the interesting thing about these arrays are that the basic design parameters associated with these arrays are really two things. One is the way we create the directionality is to essentially adjust time delays on each one of the sensors, and we'll show how to do that in a moment. And that's completely analogous to what's done for phased antenna arrays. We also, as we'll see later, can adjust the weights associated with each one of the sensors, and that gives us some additional ability to steer the array. But the basic technique that we have at our disposal is to vary the time delays on the sensors. So simply by phasing these sensors relative to one another, you can make the array sensitive to a particular direction. Now, we actually began a little bit of that analysis when we looked at time delay estimation for the two-channel case several weeks ago. So you might want to, after today's lecture, go back and review that section of the course. That was really a precursor to this part. Now, adaptive signal processing is used to estimate and optimize the weights and delays associated with the sensors, especially when these things are not known. And we'll show next class how to do that. Now, there are several advantages to the electronically beam-steered array. And the main advantage of that, as I talked about a couple times throughout the course, is that if you look at the difference between arrays that were deployed, or radar systems that were deployed on military ships in World War II, and what's deployed today, you'll notice a very striking difference. You don't see the spinning and radar antenna anymore. It was kind of a fixture of, you know, the World War II movies, you know. You're used to seeing all these antennas. First of all, you could actually see the antennas sticking out of the ships, and you could see them spinning. Well, a lot of that is gone now, and a lot of this is done through electronic steering, so that the antennas themselves are typically put in some location where they have a good line of sight to all the area you're interested in surveying, But they may just be like a plastic bubble, sort of like these cameras that you see in the buildings and things. And inside of that, you'll find the array, and the steering of the array then is done electronically. So that was a big advantage. That is a big advantage of the electronically steered arrays. And to make those systems feasible, it really required the development of low-cost digital signal processing chips. So this has been one of the areas that has driven the development of digital signal processors, because you have lots of sensors, so you have lots of parallel processing needs, so you need DSPs which have a fair amount of compute power. But the other interesting thing about the difference in these arrays, if you have any familiarity with military applications, or you've seen enough movies, in the movies they always show the circular screen and they show the radar sweeping the targets, and you see the targets showing up on the screen, and then the operator's job is to actually track the targets manually. So this required human expertise, you could say. With the electronic approach, you can actually track the targets simultaneously. The array is actually trying to steer itself in multiple directions at the same time, and that's really kind of an amazing part of all this, I think, is that you can take the same signals, and just by adjusting the delays on them, you can improve the signal-to-noise ratio in particular directions. So you can use this to track targets simultaneously. So if you look at, if you follow military programs such as the Star Wars or missile defense systems and all this, all these applications now are using this ability to track targets in real time. And the main way this is done is through the kinds of adaptive filtering techniques that we're talking about today, or what we've talked about in the course. Okay. So let's talk about the basic array properties, and I'm going to do this from a fairly high level, from a signal processing point of view than from an electromagnetics point of view. Oh, and I want to mention, let me go back to that first slide for a second. The signals that you measure can be electromagnetic, they can be acoustic. A lot of work has been done in the acoustic area because this has applications to various voice problems that we've talked about. Radar systems tend to obviously use electromagnetic waves. The geophysics systems use a mixture of both, but the actual math algorithms behind this don't really care how the signal was sensed. So whether you're dealing with electromagnetic signals or acoustic signals, doesn't really matter. However, you do need to pay attention to some plane wave propagation issues, and I won't really go through those in any kind of detail today, but we can just sort of demonstrate with these figures how this works and why we're able to steer the array using delays based on some assumptions about plane wave propagation. So we're going to focus today on arrays where the sensors are uniformly spaced. They need not be uniformly spaced. They can be non-uniformly spaced. And in fact, the mathematics for that's not too bad. We draw directly on notions of sampling theory, and if you remember from your DSP days, you can actually sample a signal with non-uniformly spaced samples as long as the spacing between the samples follows some properties related to the Nyquist rate of the signal and such. So some arrays are actually, in terms of commercial products, you see both. You see uniformly spaced arrays, you see non-uniformly spaced arrays. The non-uniformly spaced arrays, sometimes you'll see that the distances are multiples of one another, much like we would do in a sampling type application. It really is up to the system designer how to optimize those kinds of parameters. But the basic idea, looking to the up figure in the upper right, is that we have a signal, whether it's an acoustical signal or an electromagnetic signal, and it's going to be arriving at this sensor array at some angle. Now, we're going to assume plane wave propagation, which if you haven't had electromagnetics, you don't really need to worry about too much. All that really means is that the signal received at one sensor, such as X1, and the signal received at another sensor, X2, is essentially just a time, the signal at X2 is essentially just a time-delayed version of the signal at X1. And by looking at this picture long enough and thinking about a velocity of propagation for this wave, you can pretty much figure out that the distance and the velocity of propagation are going to be related to one another and translate to the time delay, as will the angle that that signal hits the array, what we call the angle of incidence. Now, is that true in real life? No. And that's one of the things that makes these arrays difficult to design, especially when we're talking about the difference between near-field and far-field signals. This is a good model if we're talking about far-field signals, meaning, for example, as I stand here in front of class and talk to somebody in the back of the room, they're essentially getting a signal which sort of fits this kind of description. However, if you're sitting at your computer terminal and you have the array mounted around the edges of your computer screen, which is one of the ways we originally, that people were looking at this kind of technology, that's actually a near-field application. And in that application, this assumption that the signal is essentially the same from sensor to sensor other than a time delay doesn't hold as well because you're so close to the microphones and to the arrays. But for the analysis today, which is sort of the classical analysis, we will assume plane wave propagation, and therefore we can do some analysis, a fairly simple analysis on this array. So the output of the array is a linear combination of the inputs, and we show that down here at the bottom. We're going to take these signals and we're going to sum them and weight them, and then later we'll actually show how we can delay them as well. We're going to assume the transmission path is linear and time invariant, which means that the relationship between the signal that I see at the sensor and the signal that was actually transmitted some distance away, that the relationship can be modeled by a linear filter, H sub j of t. Now, today we're not going to do too much with estimating the parameters of this filter, but we will talk about that when we get to the adaptive signal processing part of the problem. For today, we're mainly going to be concerned about steering the array in the direction of the signal, and not so much learning how to deconvolve the distortions introduced by the transmission path. But in a real application, you have to do both. Hj of t represents the transfer function from the source to the sensor. It can be simple, such as a time delay dependent on the distance. That's mainly what we'll look at today. Or it can be more complicated, such as a convolutional or linear filtering type effect. We're going to denote an interfering signal. We're going to call that U of t. The interference arrays kind of have two, the array problem sort of has two components to it. You have, in many applications, you'll have multiple sources that you're trying to track. Those could be multiple speakers in a room. And you will also have multiple noise sources. Noise can be coming from different directions. So we're going to call interference U of t and noise as V of t. You can actually think of noise as interference, but we'll try to keep the two separate for reasons that will become clear, I think, later. So the first analysis that we want to do on the array is to show you the benefit that you obtain by adding multiple microphones. So we're going to suppose we'll demonstrate this in a best case scenario, which means that the signal is incident on the array at an angle of 0 degrees, or what we call broadside. And the weights are equal to, we'll just set the weights equal to 1. And we're going to assume that each measurement is corrupted by a noise. This should be V sub I of t, which is uncorrelated from sensor to sensor. Now again, that's the kind of assumptions that we're going to have to make the mathematics tractable, but in practice that's a real problem when you design the arrays. And I can tell you from having worked with some people who've worked in this area, it's always fun when you go through all the math and derive these results, then you actually build the array out of some cheap microphones and you apply the math and you find out it doesn't work. And part of the reason is because it is in fact very hard to make this noise uncorrelated from sensor to sensor. I had a, remember years ago I had a graduate student working in this area, and it was a lot of fun when we actually got the first version of the array running, and he found out that the all the noise cancellation algorithms and stuff we're supposed to talk about didn't work because the noise was not uncorrelated from sensor to sensor. But we're going to assume that anyway for this application, and that simply means that the expectation of the noise at any one sensor I with the noise at any one sensor j is equal to zero, except when I is equal to j, and then we just get the noise power sigma sub v squared. So this is essentially the sigma sub v squared is the power of the noise. Now again, because we're assuming plane wave propagation, we're going to assume that the noise power is the same essentially at each sensor. The only thing we have to worry about is the time delay between those. But in practice, if the sensor is big, you'll find there is actually the noise sort of falls off at a rate of like 1 over r or 1 over r squared, where that's the distance from the source and that kind of thing. So the signals at each sensor we can model as a source delayed by a distance d, which is related to the distance from the source to the sensor, and the noise observed at that sensor V sub I of t. So we can write that the input signal to noise ratio is the power of the signal S squared of t divided by the power of the noise sigma sub V squared. And we use S squared of t here because at the sensor all we're seeing is a delayed version of the noise. So whether we talk about the noise at time t or the noise at time t minus d, the assumption is that the power is the same. Now, another thing that you might think about is what was the power of the signal at the source? Like, what's the power of the signal as it leaves my lips here versus the power of the signal that you see at the sensor? But we know those two are related by some basic properties of plane wave propagation, and that's a relationship which is easily predicted and not really relevant to this analysis. But what we would like to show is that we can improve the signal-to-noise ratio over this. If you take as the reference signal-to-noise ratio, the signal-to-noise ratio that we see at the sensor, we'd like to do some processing on that data to improve the signal-to-noise ratio. So the array output, y of t, is going to, in this very simple case, be the sum of xi of t's. We will not use the weighting for the moment. And that can be written as n times s of t plus the sum of these noises v sub I of t. And again, this is because we're making this assumption that the signal is broadside with the array. And for this analysis, we're assuming that the signal arrives at all of the sensors essentially at the same time, and that's what happens when the source is broadside with the arrays. Essentially, you can assume, since we're assuming plane wave propagation, that the signal arrives at the same time. Now, is that the case? No, because if you think about, you've got essentially a triangle type relationship. If you think about the sensors at the edge of the array, the distance from the source to those sensors is longer than the distance from the source to the sensor at the middle of the array. But we're going to assume that that's negligible, and therefore we can write this relationship for y of t. So the output signal to noise ratio is just going to be the signal that we receive, n squared s of t divided by the noise power, which is going to be the expectation of the sum of v sub I of t. So for the numerator, we have n squared times s squared of t. For the denominator, using our noise power and this uncorrelation assumption, we can write this as n times sigma sub v squared. So when we take the ratio of these two, we have n times essentially the input signal to noise ratio. So from the simple analysis, we see that the gain in signal to noise ratio is linearly proportional to the number of sensors. The signal to noise ratio on the output is equal to n times the signal to noise ratio on the input. And this we can consider to be an upper bound. It's not going to get much better than this, but it can certainly get a lot worse than this. Now, this is pretty remarkable. This is obviously, when you get a result like this, you get pretty excited, because we can, n is something that's within the control of the system designers. We can, in theory, the more microphones we allocate, or the more sensors we allocate, the better the signal-to-noise ratio gets. And if you think about, if you sort of look at typical applications, in audio processing applications, if we were able to achieve signal-to-noise ratio increase on the order of somewhere between 15 and 30 dB, that would be really, really good. That would allow us to go into environments where signals are very noisy, such as helicopters or vehicles like that. And by getting about a 15 to 20 dB improvement in signal-to-noise ratio, we can actually make performance of the system go from being very poor to being very good. There's sort of a threshold in a lot of voice processing systems. When the signal-to-noise ratio falls below about 10 dB, performance starts to get really, really bad. So this getting an improvement of on the order of 10 to 15 dB sort of takes you often out of the range where you cannot operate into a range where you can operate somewhat successfully. And the reason this equation got people excited is because, well, to do that, it looks like you're only going to need about 16 sensors, which is not unreasonable for applications where performance was really critical, like an auditorium or a video conferencing environment. And then, of course, people start thinking, well, if I put 1,000 sensors out there, not only can I get this really good improvement performance, but I can track speakers' locations very, very accurately. Now, in practice, do you get this kind of signal-to-noise ratio improvement? No. And that's why these applications of this technology has not been as prevalent as we would like, because in practice, you get much smaller improvements, and then you have a cost-performance trade-off. Now, I just wanted to say a few words this morning about sensitivity patterns, so that we can derive some signal processing results to address this problem. But I'm going to skip the derivation of this, since that's really outside the scope of the course. There's a couple pages in this in the book. It's a very simple, very straightforward derivation. But if you think about this problem of having an array, you might think about the array as being the video screen here in the classroom, and then you have a signal which is arriving at this array at some angle, whether it's from the side of the room or from the center of the room. You might think about, well, if I do nothing to the array, I just simply sum all the signals together, that's actually has the effect of making the array maximally sensitive in a direction where the angle is perpendicular to the array, what we'll call an angle of 0 degrees. And this kind of analysis was applied many, many years ago to antennas, and you may be, if you have any kind of background in antenna theory, you may be familiar with things like phased antennas or dipoles and these kinds of things. And a very useful way to analyze those systems was to look at the overall sensitivity pattern of the array as a function of angle. And what we have on the left is one display of that, where we're processing the, where we're showing the gain of the antenna as a function of the angle of incidence. And then on the right, we're actually sweeping that in essentially in a, using a polar notation, which gives us a pattern, sort of this two-dimensional view of how the array is sensitive. And what if we look at the things on the left, we see, for example, that as we would expect, the array is maximally sensitive in a direction perpendicular to the incident wave. But you'll also notice that we have these zeros in this response. There are points, there are angles for which the array is not sensitive. They're what we call nulls in the response. And then if we look at this in two dimensions, we see the same kind of behavior, but we also see these side lobes that show in alternate directions, the array has varying degrees of sensitivity. Now, the reason this is important is because, really, for two reasons. One, this begins to look like classical window theory. And in fact, you can think about the arrangement of the array in a time, in a windowing type sense, and you can derive weights for the signals at the sensors that sort of are completely analogous to the way you design time domain windows for signals. And you can see the classic design trade-offs of wanting the main lobe to be as narrow and as high as possible, and the side lobes to be attenuated as much as possible. And you can think about weighting functions that will achieve that. But the other thing that's nice about this is that you can actually, if you then now go through the analysis where you start applying a delay to each one of the sensors, you can actually change the orientation of this sensitivity pattern based on those delays. So time delaying the sensors has the effect of essentially rotating the direction in which the array is sensitive, and that's important to us. So out of this, we're going to try to do two things. We're going to try to steer the array in the direction of the signal by adjusting these time delays, but we're also going to try to steer these nulls or these zeros in the direction of the noises. And it turns out we can do that simultaneously. And that's another thing that's really nice about these arrays, is not only can you use them to enhance the signal of interest, you can use them to suppress noise coming from other directions. So again, you know, read the textbook if you want to know the derivation of these plots, but we're just going to sort of assume that we have an array structured in a way that we can vary the time delay, and by varying that time delay, we can then make the array sensitive to particular directions. So beam steering is the process of rotating the main lobe of the antenna of the array pattern in the direction of the incoming signal. This is done by simply delaying each sensor element by an amount proportional to the time it takes for the signal to propagate a distance equal to the sensor spacing. So, for example, if the array is incident at some angle theta, you know that since you know the geometry of the array and you know the speed of propagation of the wave, you can predict that the difference in time between the array, the signal arriving here and the signal arriving here. And if we know that difference in time, if we delay the signals from these sensors by an amount related to that, we can essentially align them up in time or put them back in phase. And then when we add them together, they're going to reinforce each other, and then we'll get an improvement in signal-to-noise ratio. So the angle of the main lobe obeys a simple relation where the time delay is proportional to the distance the sensors are spaced divided by the propagation speed c times the sine of the angle of incidence. And again, that's, if you look at the plane wave propagation, it's easy to show this, but that sort of makes intuitive sense, that when the angle is equal to zero degrees, the signal's broadside and delta is equal to zero, and when the angle is equal to 90 degrees, the delay at 90 degrees, the wave is coming in this direction, the delay between these sensors is simply the distance divided by the velocity of propagation. So that equation makes intuitive sense. The process of steering the beam using time delay and summing the signals is known as the delay and sum beamformer. This is by far the most common way these arrays are used, and therefore sometimes in the literature you see people talk about delay and sum beamforming, and that's simply what we're showing here, which is just delaying the signals and adding them together so that they add and reinforce one another. And the delay can be done digitally as part of the beam steering algorithm. We'll talk about that next class. And multiple beams can be managed simultaneously. We'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. So let's talk about this approach called array shading, which is a way of steering the beam so as to reinforce a signal and attenuate noise. Now what we're going to talk about here is the case where we know the direction of arrival of the signal and we know the directions of the noise that we're interested in canceling. So you might call this a deterministic or a fixed approach. In practice, we wouldn't normally know those things, but we'll go through this analysis as a way of just showing you how this works, and then we'll look at adaptive ways to estimate these things automatically. So given n sensors, we can weight the sensor outputs to steer the array in the direction of the signal and to steer the nulls in the direction of the noise. That's what our goal is with this approach called array shading. We'll first explore a deterministic way of doing this using a priori information, and then later we'll do this adaptively. So we're going to have to make another assumption, and that is that we're going to assume that the message or the signal carrying information of interest is an amplitude modulated signal, which is considered to be slowly varying, so that can be assumed to be constant across the array. And so that allows us to write a narrowband signal, m of t times e to the j omega t, where e to the j omega t is the carrier, like an AM modulation carrier, and m of t is our message of interest. So what the analysis that we're going to do here assumes a fixed frequency. It assumes essentially a signal of the form of an AM modulated signal where the carrier frequency is omega, and that's much greater than the frequency content of the message. This might be, for example, an AM signal where you have voice modulated, a 4 kilohertz band with a voice modulated up to a signal modulated up to many megahertz in frequency. So the signal you're receiving might be in the megahertz range, and the signal carrying information has a bandwidth of a few kilohertz. So the analysis that we're going to do is going to be also dependent on this frequency omega, and that's another reason this approach is not really useful in practice, because it requires knowing too much about the signal, and it can't really be made to be adaptive. So we're going to define a steering vector S associated with an angle theta, and we're going to write this S of theta as 1 e to the jk d sine theta e to the minus 2j, 2 e to the minus j 2k d sine theta, and so forth. Now this steering vector, again, comes from consideration of the actual plane wave propagation issue. So we're not going to worry about, for today's analysis, we're not going to worry about where this comes from too much, other than to note that you can see it has elements of the distance of separation of the sensors and the angle at which the signal of interest is arriving at each sensor. D is the sensor spacing, and K is the frequency of the carrier divided by the propagation velocity C. But again, all of this is all the information here for the steering vector in this analysis is known. So we don't have to estimate that. What we're going to try to estimate are the weights of the sensor array. So we'll treat our measurements as a vector X, which consists of these N signals that we collect at each one of the N sensors, X1 of T, X2 of T, and so forth. And we can write this then as I of T times S of theta. So we can write this as a message M of T times the steering vector S of theta times e to the j omega t. And that describes then all of the signals that we will see at all of the sensors. But you'll see you notice the assumption here that M of T is essentially the same at each one of the sensors. Now, we will also introduce in this case having multiple sources. So we're going to then take a sum of, from I is equal to 1 to M, of capital I sub I of T, S sub I, where now we have not just one signal of interest, but many signals of interest. Each one of these has an angle, a frequency, and the other things, the distance of separation of the array and the velocity and such will be the same. So this is just a way of writing the fact that we can deal now, we can have an array where there's multiple sources, and each one of those sources is a component of this vector X, and each one of those sources is defined in terms of this I of T. And there's a steering vector associated with each one of these sources. So there's one of these steering vectors for each one of the sources. So we can define a n by m matrix Q. Let me go back to this. You'll note that the steering vector is a function of n sensors, and there are m steering vectors associated with the m sources. So this matrix Q is an m by m matrix that consists of the steering vectors of the modulated signals, and we can also write a vector for the modulated signals, m1 of t through m sub m of t. So we can define a weight vector that we will use to steer the array as follows. We can write x of t, the signal that we receive at the sensors, as being q times m times e to the j omega t. And in this case, we're going to assume that that all of these signals are modulated at the same frequency omega. We can then write an expression for the so we get x of t is what we receive at the sensors. Now the question is, what can we do to x of t to get a better signal? So we want to combine all of these x of t's to produce a single signal, y of t, which is a weighted sum of all these x of t's. So we're going to write y of t as a product of w transpose times x of t, where w is this weight vector, 1 through n weights. And that's now our design parameter. We now, by choosing the values of w, we can essentially steer the array. And if you think about this long enough, you'll begin to realize, well, what we're going to have to do with the w's is to essentially invert the steering vectors, so that we offset the sensors based on the time delays that we're seeing at each one of these sensors. So y of t is w transpose times x of t, which is also can be written as w transpose times q times m times e to the j omega t. And we can apply a gain term g to a signal from direction theta. We can write g as s transpose of theta times w. And for m sources, we can have m distinct gains, so we can write a gain vector g, which is just q transpose times w. So this is just the introduction of g is just a way of, it's sort of like, you can think of it actually as an indicator function. It's a way of mathematically describing the fact that there's probably going to be one sensor that we want the signal of interest to appear at, and all the other sensors we'd like to be zero. So assuming the signal is associated with the first sensor, we can steer nulls in the other direction by solving this equation. G sub 1, which is S sub 1 transpose W, needs to be equal to 1. So we're going to set up the W's so that this is true. And then we also want the gains at all the other sensors to be 0. So we can write that G sub I, which is S sub I transpose W, is equal to 0 for all the other I's not equal to 1. So what this is, another way to think about this is essentially just solving an equation which says Q transpose W should be equal to this 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, which means essentially that we're going to focus on the first signal of interest and zero out all the other signals. And then if to deal with our M signals, we can just allow this 1 to appear in different positions in this vector. So we essentially have a set of equations that allow us to configure the array to be sensitive in a specific direction. And we can solve these equations for each one of the M signals of interest. But there's a little bit of a catch here. If the number of sources equals the number of sensors, then this matrix Q is square, and we can essentially solve this through matrix inversion, so it's straightforward to solve. But if the number of sources is less than the number of sensors, or the number of sources is greater than the number of sensors, then we have a little bit of a problem, and we have to apply some additional constraints or some heuristics to this to solve the equation. So we're not going to go into this, and we're not going to deal with this here too much, but it's awful convenient if the number of sources equals the number of sensors, though in practice, the number of sensors is almost always going to be greater than the number of sources. So in that case, you need to apply some additional constraints on this to steer the array, and we'll talk about that when we talk about how to do this with adaptive filtering. But today, we just want to go through a manual example to give you some idea of how the array is actually steered. So let me talk about, in the book they have a pretty nice example that actually goes through the calculations of these things. And I wanted to walk through this mainly to talk about these two plots, which show you how the array has in fact been steered. So let's consider a three-element array with complex weights W1, W2, and W3. Assume that the desired signal is incident from an angle of 0 degrees and that there are interferers incident at 30 degrees and 90 degrees. So we will find the weight values required to suppress the interferences while preserving the desired signal. These interferers could be, for example, two other talkers in the system, or two other sources. So what we're going to show here is the process by which we can essentially focus on one signal at a time. And then normally what you would do is you would reconfigure the array for each one of the signals, the sources of interest. And we're going to assume, to make things somewhat easy, that the array is designed so that the distance between the sensors is equal to a half wavelength of the carrier signal. Now that's something, that's another design of the arrays that we haven't talked about. But typically in applications like radar, where you're dealing with carrier signals, the spacing of the array is going to be set to be a quarter wavelength or a half wavelength of the carrier signal. So you know the frequency of the carrier signal, you know the velocity of propagation, so you can compute the wavelength. But what do you do in a case like an audio application where there's not a carrier signal, you just have an audio signal that has a bandwidth from 0 to 4 kilohertz, and you're trying to design an array to deal with that? Well, we know that frequency is inversely proportional to wavelength, right? So designing an array to handle the 4 kilohertz portion of the voice spectrum is not so bad, because that's a fairly high frequency. So we will need a fairly small wavelength, meaning the sensors will be spaced very closely. But we have a problem at the other end, which is to deal with very low frequencies, like 1 hertz. We're going to need sensors which are spaced very far apart. And surely accommodating frequencies such as 4,000, 8,000, or 10,000 hertz and 1 hertz, that's a 10,000 to 1 change in the distance of the array. So we have to make some assumptions about the lowest frequency that we expect to handle with the voice signal, so that we don't need this massive array. Now arrays, these arrays can be very large. The radio telescope grid in New Mexico extends over miles. I'm not sure exactly how, but it's physically a fairly large environment. Radio astronomers actually try to phase in radio antennas all around the world into an array. So you're talking about distances of thousands of miles. In submarine communications, the military has built these very, very large arrays, these very, very large and long antennas that are sensitive to very low frequencies, so they can communicate with submarines which are underwater. And these arrays, which are able to sense low frequency signals, extend for hundreds of miles. So obviously, if we're trying to build an array to be sensitive to voice, and you want that array to sit around your terminal, we can't have the spacings of the microphones be hundreds of feet, thousands of feet. So with signals like voice, we will simply make some assumptions about the lowest frequency that we want to handle, so that the spacings of the array microphones is reasonable. So we can somehow, through some careful considerations of the application, arrive at a reasonable value of the spacing in terms of the lowest wavelength that we want to be sensitive to. And for what's called a monochromatic plane wave, that's a fairly easy thing to do. For signals like voice, that's a little bit harder. But people have experimented with that and come up with very reasonable spacings. So the way this works is we'll establish this gain vector G. We want this for the three sensor case to be 100. And that's going to, so we set up an equation which says our steering vectors times W is equal to 100. And then we can write an expression for our steering vectors based on this expansion in terms of these e to the j, k, sine theta terms we described previously. So we have this matrix. The steering vector is completely known by the assumptions of the application. Times W is equal to 100. And we can then go ahead and solve this fairly simple equation, and we can arrive at these values for W, which are required to essentially invert the steering array to give us this column vector of 1, 0, 0. So the computations are rather straightforward. Again, you can think of this very much like a windowing process. But the implications of this are pretty interesting. So if we look at these two plots of the sensitivity as a function of angle for these weights that we've computed, in this case where we want to be sensitive to the signal coming from 0 degrees, and we want the array to be suppress signals coming from 30 degrees and 90 degrees, well, when we plug in these weights and we plot the response, we can see that at 0 degrees, the array is maximally sensitive, and by adjusting these weights, we've managed to introduce a null at 30 degrees and a null at 90 degrees. So we've essentially designed this shaping function such that we maximize the sensitivity in the direction of signal of interest, and we null out the signal in these two other directions that we're considering to be noise. And this is shown here, I guess, for two different ratios of the spacing to the wavelengths. Now, again, if you now turn this around and you said, well, now I want to be sensitive to the signal from 30 degrees and I want to null out these other two, you can see that's fairly easy. Just change this column vector to 0, 1, 0 and then go through the same analysis. So the nice thing about doing all this in software is that we can impose these weights in software and nothing about the physical array has to be changed. And that's why these steering approaches are so popular, because we can steer this array in three directions simultaneously just by adjusting the W's. Okay, so what we've done today is we have introduced the concept of array processing. We've introduced a basic sensor array, and we've shown how to steer this array. We've demonstrated an upper bound on the gain that can be achieved. We showed that the gain of this array is proportional to the number of sensors that you have in the array. We derived some basic properties of the array and demonstrated a way to steer the array in the direction of the signal and to steer nulls in the direction of the interferers. And that concept is going to be really critical to making all this work with adaptive filtering. Now, the thing that we want to do next is to demonstrate how to do this adaptively. We would like to be able to sense the direction of the signal and the interferers adaptively, automatically, and we would like to be able to let the array learn those parameters adaptively. And you can imagine how we're going to do that. We're essentially going to do something like what amounts to a gradient descent to maximize the signal to noise ratio. The advantages of this approach is that there's no requirement on a priori information about the signal or the interference. Equally important, we can adapt to changes in the signal or the interference. The reason we want this thing to be adaptive is so that as I walk around the room here, the system can track my voice in real time. And we also want it to be able to adapt to noise. And that's a very tricky issue, because in the real world, noise can be both you can have long-term stationary noise, like the fan sound that you're hearing coming from the projectors, or you can have short-term noises, like some of the noises we hear outside the room here with the door being open. We obviously want the array to be able to adapt to the long-term noises, but we also don't want these short-term noises to cause the array to diverge too much. And balancing that becomes a typical trade-off in adaptation times and things. And we've talked about a lot of that already, but now we'll generalize that to the multi-sensor approach. And then with this techniques, we'll also be able to track multiple signals simultaneously in an automatic way. And this is essentially what modern radar and other systems are doing. They have this ability to track targets in real time automatically, and that allows the operators to manage many more targets in real time much more efficiently. So I think we ended a little early today, but we'll just break for today. I want to start, next time I'll start the adaptive version of this, and we should be able to cover the remainder of Chapter 8 tomorrow, or Thursday rather. Okay? I'm sorry?
Midterm is then covers all?
Yeah, the midterm will cover all the chapters. Though, you know, the midterm is going to focus on much less on this latter stuff, like the application space, and much more on the basic concepts of adaptive filtering. Okay. It's closed. I think I said on the course syllabus, it's closed book of one page of notes.